Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, novelist Carl Hiaasen. Carl Hiaasen is a famed Florida novelist and newspaper columnist who writes in both fiction and nonfiction, essentially about how Florida and the natural world has been raped, pillaged, and otherwise massacred by those in search of the almighty dollar and other classic temptations. His new book is a departure. The Downhill Lie is autobiographical. It's about fatherhood, parenting, conflict, quixotic quests, middle age, and golf. Carl Hiaasen, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Okay, so give us the heads up on this book. Why?
It's different from the others. And I don't know how I got talked in. There were a series of tragic mistakes, actually. The first was me being talked into playing golf again. I'd given up golf when I was in school 32 years ago. I hadn't really touched a club or played seriously and had no intention of ever playing again. I was psychologically unfit for the golf course. That was just one of many social arenas that I had no place being. But the same guys I used to play with back in high school had sort of coaxed me back into playing again, and then terrible things started happening, obviously, and so how else could have ended? So I started keeping a journal at the suggestion of Mike Lupica, the great sports writer for the New York Daily News, and it was for his own sick amusement, I found out later. He really had no interest in my golf game or my progress, but he was laughing at my expense, not with me either, at me. And so an editor at Random House just thought it would make a funny book of me, you know, just basically my public humiliation.
And you got in a little further, perhaps, than you thought.
Yeah.
With you're taking pharmaceuticals and as sold to improve the golf game. I guess maybe vitamin supplements.
It's over the counter stuff. I started buying all the stuff that you see in the infomercials. If anybody watches a golf channel, they know, or reads golf magazines, their target demographic is basically me, middle-aged guys who can't possibly do something as well in their 50s as they did in their 20s. I mean that across the board. And so, but they sell you all kinds of stuff. One of the stuff that I started taking was these little capsules called Mind Drive.
Sort of the Viagra for middle-aged golfers?
Or? Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to help you focus. And I didn't know what was in there, which is always a bad sign. And I mean, because it looked like lawn cuttings, you know. But I would take these things, and it had no visible effect. And finally, my wife looked up some of the stuff on the internet, because they have to list the ingredients, even though it's over the counter. And one of the ingredients, I forget, I couldn't even pronounce it, but it's in the book, was listed as a natural antidepressant, which is, of course, perfect for golf. So I started doubling my dose the minute I read that.
What else did you buy in this quest for
I bought this little pendant, a little piece of plastic that you put around your neck that has a secret resonating cell that gets your karma in the state of mind it has to be for golf. And, of course, that didn't work around my neck. And then I read the further in the instructions. They said, well, if you put it in your right pocket, it also works. But don't put it in your left pocket, which was intriguing to me. But it didn't matter where I put it. It didn't work, and or where I wanted to put it after I was done, for that matter. And then I bought these swing training devices. You know, they have these special clubs you go out in the backyard, and one has hinges in it, and so it's very difficult to swing. The idea is to teach you your swing. The other was very heavy, like a 40-ounce 7-iron, basically, which weighs more than Barry Bonds' baseball bat. And so the idea of it being, if you swing it often enough, you get strong, you'll get your swing groove. But I fell for all this stuff.
You went to clinics, and you got videotaped, and went to the pros.
The videotape is the most, it's really, truly humbling, because they always, you know, they'll take pictures of your swing, and then they put it up on a giant split screen. And on the other side of the screen, they've got like Tiger or Phil Mickelson or Ernie Els. And they're timed out just to go just where you're swinging, on the left and the right. And it's like the most grotesque before and after you can imagine. I went through all this tribulation, and I kept the journal faithfully. And one day I sunk a golf cart, so I dutifully wrote up how I managed to sink a golf cart, thinking it happens all the time to golfers, and I would get some sympathy for it. But apparently it doesn't happen all that often. And then the editor had said to me, you know, it's all very funny and stuff, but you need to really go back a little bit into your childhood and talk about when you used to play when you were a kid and how that got started. And, of course, it was with my dad. Like a lot of golfers will tell you, I mean, men and women both, it was a big deal to get that much time, you know, 3-4 hours on a Sunday afternoon with your dad when it was a lot. And that was the original reason I'd started playing when I was a kid, was just to spend some time with my dad, who was kind of a workaholic, and we didn't get to see him that much. And I thought all I got to do is learn to play golf and it'll all be, and I wasn't, you know, I was hacking it around back in those days. That's the ridiculous thing was I was never, it's not like I was playing on the college golf team when I quit. You know, it wasn't like I was good. I was a lousy player back then.
My guest is Carl Hiaasen. He's the Miami Herald op-ed writer and novelist, talking about his latest book on golf. How much money did you spend on this quest?
I don't know. Thousands of dollars, I have to tell you. I don't know. Somewhere I've got it all written down, but even going to one of these like weekend golf academies or clinics that you go to, I mean, you can drop a couple grand just to go to get your slice fixed or your hook straightened out or learn how to putt or hit out of a sand trap.
So this gets to a question, since you wrote about it, presumably all these things are a write-off.
Well, I would, I don't know how much of that, some of it I think certainly falls under the term of research, some of it under the heading of folly, I think.
I want to sort of figure out where this book falls in the pantheon of Hiaasen. For those poor, unfortunate Atlantans who don't get to read your newspaper column, what are, from your perspective, what are you writing about?
Well, these days, obviously, politics. I mean, I write an op-ed column, opinion column for the Herald now, and on Sundays when I'm in town, and I write about whatever I choose to write. And I try to alternate. One is sort of a Florida column about something going on in Florida, but more often than not, there's a national connection, because all Florida is the vortex of national weirdness, and if something's happening there, it's probably happening in the rest of the country.
In terms of your Florida stuff, you've written a lot about development.
The environment,
development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the problem with this book. I mean, I was conflicted. I mean, I played golf when I was young, but as golf became more popular, and it became wildly popular, as you know, more and more golf courses were erected in Florida and I think it's probably true here as well, as excuses for housing developments. I mean, they weren't constructed for the golf so much as for the real estate issues. As a result, you end up, I was very careful about the course that, you know, first of all, you have to join a club, and you know, writers are not joiners of clubs, and we shouldn't really belong in any clubs, and we really should be left alone. But and the other thing is, golf apparently is a social sport. I mean, where you have to like play in foursomes, and I think it all should be played in onesomes, because I'm happiest at my I'm all by myself out there traipsing around. But I found a course that was ecologically friendly, but not only in the way they treated the water and all the other stuff, but also the fact it was built on an orange grove, a dead orange grove. There was no habitat to destroy, and in creating this thing, now that's it's full of birds and gators and all kinds of bobcats, all kinds of stuff live out there now. And that, I tell people, that's the saddest irony about, in South Florida in particular, is that the golf courses become little miniature wildlife preserves, because the rest of the natural habitat has been wiped out or compromised.
My guest is Carl Hiaasen. He's the Miami Herald op-ed writer and novelist, talking about his latest book on golf. In your novels, your wonderful former governor character, Skink, the one-eyed, you know, roadkill-eating avenger of those who rape and pillage nature, and in general, your themes, you managed to kill off a lot of really loathsome kind of people who build golf courses
and high rises and strip malls and I don't discriminate.
There's an irony in this book. There's a lot of irony in that you seem to have gone over to the dark side in some ways.
Well, as I said, I'm pretty careful about where I go and what I do with the golf club anyway. But I mean, I could certainly see myself. An errant drive could easily kill some of these guys out there. No, you have to be. Like I said, it's a sort of a conflicting thing. We have to go back to the history of golf when it was first, way back to Scotland. I mean, the links were always created around nature. And I can't think of another sort of sport or pastime where nature plays such a large role. And anywhere from Pebble Beach to wherever you talk about, even Augusta, I mean, it's the trees, it's the hills, it's the lakes. And it's all carefully manicured and tended by man, but there's still There's still wild moments, especially in Florida. I mean, I've advocated, no one's taken me up on it. I think alligators, for instance, should be mandatory on every water hazard. I'm not talking little, I'm talking big, big alligators, because that would speed the pace of play of golf. And I think that's what golf needs, is to move it along a little quicker. I tell you what, you had big gators out there, you'd see people playing 18 holes in about an hour and a half.
Well, you write in the book about a moment where you had your favorite alligator that you regard as good karma.
Yeah. Anytime I see a predatory reptile, just from my childhood growing up in the edge of the Everglades, it's a sunny moment for me. You know, if you see any sign of a bobcat, anything out there, I mean, a friend of mine was in Senegal or somewhere, and these giant monitor, he was playing golf, who knows why, in this country, and these giant monitor lizards thought the golf balls were stork eggs. So every time he would get a drive in the fairway, one of these giant lizards would come out and eat the golf ball because he thought it was a stork egg. But, I mean, these were fierce lizards, and I thought, we need some of, the PGA needs to bring some of that into the
Komodo dragons.
Oh, my God. Everybody would watch. Everybody would go to the golf matches.
Yeah, it'd be like ultimate fighting.
Yeah, ultimate golf.
And the, you know, the animals that kill kind of
thing.
This
is a sport that should be played with all the elements of nature in full play and on display, I think.
Okay, so now the book is done.
It's
done. Are you playing as much as you
were? That's a good question. My plan was to quit playing golf again on the day I finished the book, because that's the nature of the ordeal. And I thought this will be the perfect exclamation point or punctuation point to the experience. Then what happened in the latter weeks of the journal was that my kids got really interested in playing, and I would go to the course with them. My wife, of all people, started taking golf lessons. That was one of the more shocking phone calls in our marriage. And now there's no escape for me. I want to spend time with the kids like my dad did with me, so obviously I'm going to go to the course. And my little one, my 8-year-old, is just a beacon of sunshine out there. And it's got the greatest attitude. I mean, he stands up on the practice range, he whiffs, and then he takes a big grin and he knocks the next one straight down the fairway. And that's an attitude that every golfer would kill to have. And so now I can't escape. It looks like I'm stuck. I'm not playing as much as I was when I was writing, because I have other writing projects. I think I'm still locked into the, I don't think there's any easy escape.
The book is The Downhill Lie, A Hacker's Return to a Ruinous Sport by Carl Hiaasen. Carl, thanks very much for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thanks for having me on again, and I hope people enjoy it.